Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of February, Anno Domini 2015, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. But before we do the news, I have an announcement to make. My favorite daughter, also my only daughter.
Say the only which, one.
Which
yeah.
is also your least favorite daughter.
Also my least, I've told her that more than once, is applying to graduate schools. She started last week. She's already been accepted at Mary Baldwin College for their Master of Letters, Master of Fine Arts in Shakespeare and Performance.
Wow.
So she'll get an MLit and an MFA. And that's one of her top schools. She's got three more to hear from. My belief is that she'll be accepted to all of them and have a terrible decision to make.
Yeah.
Because she can only go to one at a time.
That's about it.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Hmm.
I told her, go to the one that gives you the biggest scholarship. Please. Please do that.
Any RIT sister schools?
Yeah, not for graduate work. No. Sadly, no.
Mm.
No, that doesn't work that way. Wish it did.
Yeah.
Boy, do I wish it did. Anyway, there's that. So if there's anybody out there with a bucket load of cash who's really eager
to invest it in a young person's life?
Right, to institute the Amelia Francesco postgraduate scholarship.
Kickstarter. Has that guy made $1 million for a potato salad?
That's not a bad idea, actually. That's not a bad idea at all. All right, to the news. This has been a big week for the future of the... To the other news. This has been a big week for the future of the Internet. After months of speculation and a few days of wild rumor, Federal Communications Commission Chairman Tom Wheeler came out on Wednesday in full support of full Title II reclassification of broadband Internet. Beg your pardon. This means the Internet service providers like Comcast and Time Warner will not be allowed to offer paid prioritization of certain content. They will also be prohibited from blocking or throttling traffic. Crucially, Wheeler's proposed rules will also apply to mobile broadband providers. Cell phone companies like AT&T and Sprint that offer mobile data. With Wheeler on board, it is likely that the FCC will pass his proposed rules in a 3-2 vote at the February 26th FCC meeting, with the other Democrats in the commission voting with Wheeler. Wheeler's public announcement comes on the heels of news leaked from the FCC that it will be taking on the 19 to 21 states, depending on how you count, that have laws preventing local governments from building their own broadband networks. That decision will make it immeasurably easier for local governments to offer municipal broadband services that will directly compete with private ISPs. Those 20-ish states currently have rules on the books that make it either difficult or pointless for local governments to create their own broadband service. Some restrict the geographic areas in which municipal broadband can be built, while other laws prevent cities from offering municipal broadband for cheaper than what private ISPs sell their services for, effectively defeating the whole purpose of an independent network. Meanwhile, Wheeler has been enamored of the power of community broadband to compete with private ISPs for some time. Of course, Title II will be challenged in court. So, too, will the FCC's attempt to preempt state regulations against municipal broadband. If telecom companies argue that private investment is the best way to encourage the growth of broadband infrastructure in the place of city governments creating municipal broadband, they will then have a very hard time arguing against that they should not be regulated as a public utility, since that's what they would be effectively replacing. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is FCC chairman tells ISPs they are public utilities. And your choices are about dang time, this is a slippery slope, just one question, will I pay more or less, and for the vast majority of our listeners, how does this affect my 56K modem? So far, we have 36 votes, and the number one choice is, of course, just one question. Will I pay more or less? We know you'll have more to say about this, so if you scroll down on the right, you'll on our website, soundsbites.org, bites with a Y, you'll find under Fascinating Stuff, the forums. And if you click on that, it will take you to our list of forums. The second one down is the poll discussion. And if you click on that, the top poll discussion topic is 7 Feb 15, FCC chairman tells ISPs they are public utilities. Please feel free to speak your piece. Try to keep it semi-civil. And then while you're at that, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Now, does this mean it happened, or does it have to go through Congress or something?
Well, here's the deal. The FCC chairman said he's going to propose it. It has to be voted on by 3 out of the 5 members of the FCC committee to become a law.
Ah.
And that, well, that it has to be voted on by 3 out of the 5 committee members to go on to the next step. There are, it's a bipartisan committee, so there's 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats. But Wheeler is also a Democrat, and he's the 5th person on the committee. So it's already 3-2. You know the Democrats are going to vote for it because Obama has wanted this since day one.
Yeah.
So once that happens, it will go to the president for his signature. You know he's going to sign it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much a done deal. Then it'll be a couple of months before it actually starts to happen, and at which point, then all of the ISPs will sue the government.
Yeah.
Well, we already know that's going to happen. I mean, we all know that's going to happen. And then it'll wend its way through the courts. But in the meantime, unless they can prove that an injunction is necessary, it'll actually happen. So for at least a certain amount of time, we will get net neutrality.
Right. And one of the first immediate things that I've read is that they've already ordered cellular carriers to stop throttling unlimited bandwidth.
Right.
Depending on how you define unlimited, we're not stopping your bandwidth. We're just slowing it down,
right.
So they'll no longer be able to do that. So the carriers won't be able to advertise unlimited bandwidth unless it actually is. So you can have throttle. So you can be throttled, gouged, or unlimited now.
Right. So we'll see where all this leads us. What it will actually lead to, of course, is just higher prices. Because now ISPs will say, well, we can't live with these new rules, so we're going to have to charge you more. You know what? If you can't live under the rules,
how many billion
get
was
out
your,
of the business.
Yeah, and how many billions was your profit last year?
No, last quarter.
Last quarter, yeah.
It's important because these are all publicly held companies. The only thing that's important to them is how much money they made their investors last quarter. All we are is the product they give to those investors. So really, that's where that stands.
Yep.
Anyway.
And we'll probably hear a lot more about this and other topics in the cable TV industry this week at the Apple Cider meeting.
Yep.
Wednesday at 7 p.m. at East High School, corner of Main and Culver. We're going to have Phil Dampier from Stop the Cap talking about telecommunications issues and how to reduce your cable TV bill by cutting out cable TV and watching stuff over the internet. And this net neutrality is a big part of that, of keeping the prices down, hopefully, so that you'll be able to watch TV shows on the internet without needing a cable TV subscription.
Right. And all those of you who have or want to have or will soon have Greenlight should definitely show up. Because for you, it'll be a lot easier to watch all this stuff online. Anyway, to the phones, our first caller, Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's up?
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon, guys.
Yep.
I'm running Windows 7. I lost all my music stations. They're all local stations. Some come out of New York. The only station I can pick up is 901, you guys. And for some reason, when I click on, say, like one of the local stations, Warm, I get an error message saying specified player cannot be found in this environment.
What?
And I have no idea what this means or where to go from here.
What program are you using to do the listening?
Pardon me?
What program are you using to listen to the radio?
I don't know.
What icon do you click on? You're on a website.
On one of the local stations, and it just brings up the music.
Okay, so you're on a website, and you're using a web player. The most common web player these days is Flash from Adobe. And Adobe releases updates frequently. I thought, there were three this month so far?
Yeah.
To fix problems that are found that let the bad guys into your computer. And what the OSs are doing now, Apple does it, I think it's built into Windows 8 too, if your Flash is too old, it will shut it down and stop it from working. So you probably have to go to the Adobe website, adobe.com, and download the latest update to the Flash player.
Okay.
Now, a couple of things about that. What is your browser?
Internet.
Yeah, okay.
Internet Explorer.
What you might want to do is download Chrome. And just try going to those websites with Chrome. The Chrome browser has its own version of Flash.
And it updates itself.
And it updates itself.
Okay.
So that will tell you if that's the problem. Right, and this is whether you end up using Chrome or not is unimportant. This is just a troubleshooting step. You can go back to Internet Explorer once you understand whether or not this is actually the problem.
And one of the other big players is JPlayer, which is Java,
right,
which also gets disabled automatically because it's updated frequently.
Right. So
okay. If what about if I went to Internet Explorer, did all my default settings, so everything back to default.
Nope.
No.
That's not going to work. What's happened is, if it is this problem, then what's happened is the system has said, oh no, this is far too old a version of Adobe.
Chrome,
we won't let you use it.
By far, installing Chrome would be the far better choice. So what? You're going to wind up with an extra better browser than Internet Explorer because everybody loves to exploit Internet Explorer. I haven't used Internet Explorer in a couple of years.
Whether you decide, and I know people fall in love with their browser, so I'm not telling you have to go to Chrome. What I'm telling you is test with Chrome. And if you can get to your stations that way, then you know exactly what the problem is.
Okay.
That
right,
makes sense?
Do some more, I'll try those, see what happens.
Right.
Let us know.
I will. Thank you.
Yep.
And we are seeing a lot of websites are shifting to newer technologies. That was a story, was it last week? Where YouTube is another big place where Flash is used. And they're moving to the new HTML standard for video. And a lot of other websites are doing that too. Flash has been around forever. It was one of the first of the Web 2.0 that gave us video playback in the first place, but it's gotten old in the tooth, and because so many people have it, it's a really big target for the bad guys.
Yeah, Microsoft is updating it for the next version of Windows, for Windows 10, but it's not being as quickly updated on 8 or 7, certainly not on 7, since 7's out of...
I try to encourage folks, some folks fall in love with their browsers, and I get that. But fall in love with anyone except Internet Explorer. I mean, Chrome and, Foxfire, they're so much better and less exploited.
But we understand that Explorer is the one that comes with your computer. So.
Yeah, and everybody thinks, I had one person swear up and down, she was told, no, she has to use Internet Explorer for everything. It won't work unless you use Internet Explorer. I go, were they being paid by Microsoft? So I put Foxfire on it at the time and got it to come up and everything else. She goes, but they said it wouldn't work. I go, well, here it is.
They may have said they wouldn't support it, and that's one of those Weasley words that we use in tech support. Not support means they won't answer your question.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean it won't work.
Yeah. Right. Well, and sometimes you find a site that will say looks best in.
Right.
Right. And that's often Internet Explorer, because many places programmers are lazy. There are Windows toolkits that are designed to help you create websites that specifically target Internet Explorer.
And then they don't work well at all in the other browsers because of all the different cruft.
Right.
What was it? Microsoft Front Page, the web authoring tool, put so much crud in the web page it created that you couldn't use it in other programs.
Right. And, of course, Bill, Ron, you should probably know that, in fact, we have reached the end of mainstream support for Windows 7. You can no longer get support, so updating will be difficult. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites. I'm member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We should probably clarify a little bit what the end of Windows 7 support means.
Yeah.
That we ended the last call very quickly with, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So Windows 7 Service Pack 1, the Microsoft support lifecycle, mainstream support ended last month, January 13. Extended support will continue for another 5 years. So basically that means that if you call Microsoft, they may not answer your question. If your store is still running Windows 7 because they're not supporting it. Now, I'm trying to look up the details here, but it still means they're going to release patches. That's extended support, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we're still going to get our patches for a few more years.
Yeah. Well, it's still too big of I think they'd be committing suicide, professional suicide anyways, because Windows 8...
Right.
Nobody wanted that.
Right. And so that's one of the reasons they're giving, planning on to give Windows 10 for free to all the Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 users.
Right.
So it's hopefully Windows 10 and either of you guys played with it yet?
Not yet.
No. Windows 10 will look more like Windows 7 did, and you won't have to fight with that Windows 8.
Yeah.
The differences
that's what I'm hearing.
That everyone hates.
I've been on the web, just checking out a few of the sites there and early reports, and a lot of folks are liking Windows 10. Because, again, it gives them that look and feel, of their old Windows. And I'm sorry, that's what people are comfortable with. You ingrain that into them for a few decades and all of a sudden want to pull out, like they did with ME and those great operating systems. They just have to every so often be pulled back a little bit. And, they lose touch.
Yep.
What's really going on out there. So I'm glad, that they're finally bringing it back and doing something that will encourage folks to go out there and buy.
And there's the market pressure to come up with something new and release it new to keep the stockholders happy.
Oh, yeah. There's always that pressure.
Yeah. Yep. But when the users don't like it, and Windows XP still has a 25% market share.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
I've got a couple of computers at work, and a really annoying thing has happened to them. I have this thing called Great Arcade Hits. So if you have a website and there's some highlighted text that you would assume is some sort of a link, you click on it and you get something totally... I don't know, laundry detergent ad or something like that.
Yeah, it's sort of a generic thing we call adware that gets installed and tries to put up more ads. You can remove it from the ad remove control panel in Windows, according to their website. Let me see. Computer. I like bleepingcomputer.com.
Yeah, me too.
they have a couple articles about it. That type of adware is becoming a more common threat these days.
Uh-huh.
Viruses are kind of on the downturn because they don't really make the bad guy any money. So it's the adware. So a lot of times you need to run something like Super Anti-Spyware or Malwarebytes to remove this type of adware.
I did the Security Tango, and it did not get rid of it.
You might want to start, too late to start, but you might want to next go to the Windows Ad Remove programs and try to remove it from there.
Oh, okay.
And there, what often happens is the program installs and then also installs add-ons or extensions to your browser, depending on which browser you're using. Some call them add-ons, some call them extensions. So you have to go to your extensions list and remove it from there as well.
Extensions list, and how would I do that?
That's the three little horizontal bars.
What's your browser?
Chrome.
Chrome.
Okay, in the upper right-hand corner, there are three little horizontal lines.
Yep.
That is your menu.
Okay.
If you open that, the very last, depending on which version you're running, the very last menu item is more tools.
Yeah.
And the first menu item off that is extensions.
Okay.
And then when you get into there, all you have to do at that point is find it in the list and uncheck enabled.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay.
Yeah.
I will try.
All right.
It's supposed to, yeah. It's you. There was probably an ad that popped up. This all starts with an ad that pops up on a website and says, you know, would you like to make your web browsing experience better? Would you like to see more information about something? And this one, the greatest great arcade hit, seems to be a video game ad. So you get more video game ads. And because ads can have code in them, you don't even have to click anything. Just by viewing the website, the ad runs and installs this software. That's one of the reasons a lot of people run an ad blocker. But the danger there is if too many people block too many ads, then the legitimate websites have to figure out a different way to make their money.
Right. Does that make a certain amount of sense?
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone. Okay.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Richard. What's up?
Thank you. I just picked up a desktop computer under warranty, no charge to repair the hardware. However, they wanted to charge me $100 for malware. Presumably, that means I went to a malicious website unknowingly and picked up malware. So I'm hoping your security Tango will help me remove the malware. I've not even plugged it in yet. And will the malware, once I do plug it in and connect my router, will that be a danger to my tablet before I remove the malware?
It could. Unlikely, but it could.
Okay.
So your best bet is to leave your tablet off until you've cleaned your machine.
Okay.
The Security Tango will get rid of about 98% of the common stuff.
Okay.
There are a few rootkits, et cetera, that really should be done by a professional.
Okay.
But for most stuff, the Security Tango will do fine.
Okay. And you haven't changed it all over the last few years?
Because
one year I tried it was easy. The next time I tried it, I found it very difficult. But.
Well, the problem is that the bad guys keep getting better at what they do.
Oh.
So it keeps getting more and more tedious to run the Security Tango, and there are more and more steps. And I can't make that any easier if you want to get everything.
I see. One more question. The router and the modem, once I unplugged it from the tower and then brought it into repair, can I just plug those two back in and they will, sync themselves into the system or whatever?
Yes. Connect everything up but leave it all turned off.
Really?
Let me finish. The first thing you want to turn on is, I'm assuming by router, by modem, you mean the thing that's connected to the internet itself.
Correct.
To your internet service provider. Yep. Right. So turn that on first.
Yep.
Give it a minute to stop bouncing and sync up and do all its business.
Yep. So because it has to sync with the upstream router.
Right.
At then, Time Warner.
Right. And then turn on your router.
Okay.
So it can sync with the Time Warner modem.
Got it.
Then you can turn on, again, give it a minute. And then turn on your machine.
Got it. Okay. And then go online and look up Security Tango and download all those fancy things and do it from there.
SecurityTango.com.
Thank you, guys.
There you go.
Bye.
Yeah, most of the modern routers and access points and modems are fast enough that you could turn them all on at once. But when it doesn't work, you end up turning it off and starting one at a time anyway.
Yep. I'm kind of surprised that the Security Tango, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, Security Tango is as popular as it is. I get tens of thousands of hits a month. It's very nice. I'm very pleased. Apparently nobody else sees the donate button, but that's a different story. We're going to go back to the phones.
Make it bigger.
Make it bigger. Our next caller is Mark.
Oh, crap. There's a Matt Keeper ad, which is one of those crapware programs. It's technically not malware, but it's crap.
It doesn't really do anything, right?
Yeah.
Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What?
Hi, guys.
What?
Sorry.
Welcome, Mark. What?
I got a question about that upgrade when Microsoft does that upgrade for Windows 7 and 8 users. Say I want to redo my computer after I, you know, update. They say it's free probably for like a year. You have to do the upgrade to
right.
to 10. And then say I need to reformat the computer. Am I still going to be able to get back to that
operating system? Well, we don't know at this point.
And the easiest, best thing to do is when you get that free upgrade, which will likely be a download, not
right.
a disk,
right.
put it on a disk yourself, mm-hmm. a USB
okay.
drive or
yeah.
DVD drive, so you have a copy yourself in case they stop making it.
Okay, so it's not going to be one of those cases where you go and it downloads and then it installs itself and then it's gone.
Again, we don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, until it happens, we won't know. But my guess is that three or four month period
and see what people think about it before you actually do it.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy with the arrow in the back.
Yeah, and I also want to be the guy that has the right drivers.
Yep.
Yeah. There's that. But I would definitely say. Be that guy who waits.
We've seen the same thing in the Mac world, too. All of the new Mac OSs are downloadable, and the installer deletes itself when it's done installing.
Right.
So if you want to put it on two computers, you have to download it twice, or three, or four, or five, which is very, very annoying. So the trick, again, is to make a copy of the installer before you install it, on a removable disk, then it can't delete itself.
Right, exactly.
Good to know. Thank you.
Yep. All right, thanks.
Yep.
I put in a fresh Windows 7 install on a machine the other day with Surface Pack 1 preloaded, checked Windows Update, and there were 191 updates waiting.
Yep.
We were talking a little earlier, will Windows release a Surface Pack 2 to roll all those updates together? Probably not.
No, not for 7 because it's out
of support now, yep. So you still have to download all those updates and reboot 3 or 4 times and keep checking for updates until it says there's none left.
Right. Right, and that's the thing people forget.
Yeah.
Just because you did an update and it's over doesn't mean it's over.
Right.
You got to recheck and recheck and recheck until the check comes back and says it's over.
Yep. Because a lot of times some updates need a previous update installed first, so it can't show it to you until the first one is already there.
Right.
So especially if you haven't done your updates in a while.
Right.
Although, there's that catch-22 that turning an auto update on is good, but then you often have to reboot after the update, which is annoying. So you keep putting it off, and then the updates never get installed. And by the time you do run them, there's even more that need to go. So you should install your updates. You should let it reboot.
Well, everybody wants to wait for that,
yeah.
And you really can't. You really, really can't.
Apple's got a new thing now. The reminder notification will pop up, and there's updates waiting. Do you want to do them now, or there's a remind me tonight? And so later tonight it will remind you. So do your updates and then go to bed.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Greg from Greece, New York. Welcome, Greg. What's up?
Hi, Nick. My name's Greg. Yes, I'm looking to do the security tango. I've got a rootkit that picks up my McAfee picks it up at the end of the scan, and I'm wondering if I need to turn off McAfee to run the security tango.
You shouldn't have to There may be one. It depends.
Okay.
Every once in a while, McAfee. Are you running the latest version?
No, I actually got Windows 7.
Okay, then
the latest version of McAfee, yes.
Oh. Theoretically, if you're running the latest version of McAfee, then you shouldn't have to turn it off. But every once in a while, McAfee itself says, this is clearly a virus for the antiviruses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a false positive. So mm-hmm. you may find it necessary to turn it off. But if it's a rootkit,
you may need to boot from a different disk to clean it.
Right. The best way to do it is to boot from a different machine.
I was going to say, McAfee has a program called Rootkit Remover, but it was last updated June 2014.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. So quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay. I had several other questions. If you guys got time, they're pretty quick, I think.
So we'll go for it. We'll see how far we get.
Okay. You guys recommending Firefox or Chrome for browsing right now?
Oh, I personally love Chrome.
Okay. I'm gonna look into that.
And you can try them both and see which one you like.
I heard you mention earlier in the show that Windows 10 is going to be offered free. for users of Windows 7.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's great news. And I'm wondering, would just the installation of Windows 10 wipe out the rootkit, or is it going to just... It's probably not. My guess is
unlikely, no. Honestly.
Yeah, no, you got to get rid of that.
It's certainly possible, but I'd get rid of it.
I wouldn't want to sit there and take a chance of, you know, your data and everything else getting messed up because of that rootkit.
That's what I was thinking too. Yep. I thought, well, what if I get Windows 10 in there? Now that's infected as well.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
The concept of a rootkit is it installs at the root of the hard drive before Windows even loads.
Yeah.
So there's nothing.
My McAfee looks at it. It's the last thing it sees during the during a full scan, and it just sits there. And it's like the last 2% of the scan is rootkit. just get rid of it. But of course, I somehow installed it. I chose to install it when I was visiting a website, unknowingly, of course. And there it is. Okay, the last question, if you got time, Wi-Fi router.
Hold on. I'm afraid. We got to take a break.
Okay, doke.
I'm sorry.
All right, it's all right. I'll pick it up the next time.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, Greg from Greece, you didn't have to hang up. You could have waited through the commercials, but that's okay. Our next caller is Jack from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
Hi, fellas. Hey, got a question for you. I've got a Dell laptop, and a couple of weeks ago, what appeared on the... on the screen, a square. I might have the initials wrong, but AVN has detected a problem. And then I got a couple squares down there. I can click on send the report, or skip that. So whether I send a report or skip that thing, it reappears about a minute later. So you think I got a virus?
Probably some spyware.
Do you have an antivirus program? And if so, what is it?
I got Avast, and a readout comes there up lately. I've got like 16, 17 days before I have to renew. But I've got Avast in there. The only thing I can think of is a couple weeks ago I had a problem with iTunes. I bought a book, and it didn't quite download completely. I had to go through iTunes to get it adjusted. So maybe while they were playing around in there or something, or something happened.
Well, if the thing to do is do a full scan with Avast.
Uh-huh.
If the program that says it detected a problem is not Avast, then it's either just a pop-up from a website or it is a virus that you need to get rid of, and Avast should do that for you.
There is an antivirus program called AVG that...
Right.
Theoretically, if you had that installed, it would pop up and tell you. But you know, AVN is a vascular necrosis.
Right. But if you had AVG, you would know you were running it, theoretically, yeah?
It might be AVP, yeah. Okay, well, I'll try that.
All right, good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep, and that's the danger these days is ads pop up on screen and try to trick you into saying you're infected with this or infected with that. Yeah. Some of them even give you a phone number to call with authorized technical support, and then steal your money.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they'll go to the next step of even offer to remote control your computer. Let us connect to your computer. We'll fix the problem for you.
Yeah.
And while they're in there, who knows what they'll do.
Exactly. And that, like,
and again, you don't have to click anything. You go to a web, Facebook, Walmart. You go to any page that has an ad on it, and these fake ads can pop up.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes even when you have pop-up blocking.
Yeah.
I actually got one the other day, and like I said, I've got pop-up blocking. I got a big window that said, Windows has detected an error.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, click here or call here, whatever it said. And I thought to myself, Windows detected an error on my Linux machine.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing for Windows.
Yeah.
But you'll get them. My point is you'll get them all the time. And generally speaking, they look... good.
Yep.
They look legit as all get out.
Yep. Yep.
A lot of times the grammar will be awkward because most of these types of bad guys are not native English speakers. Or, you know, every letter will be capitalized or there'll be too many, you know, periods. So that type of stuff is often a giveaway. But they look really, really legitimate, and we're calling them scareware. They scare you into calling the phone number and turning over your credit card.
And the thing that is, it's not a virus.
Yep. Like so I said, your antivirus won't catch it.
You're seeing more and more spyware and malware. Totally different, folks, from virus software. So if you're running virus software, which we still encourage highly, you still also have to have some type of malware and spyware application running on your machine also. And you got to do that diligently. We recommend Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes. Both of those programs that if you run them, you can buy the paid versions, and we encourage you to do that because it'll do it automatically in the background. You won't even have to give it a second thought. But it will catch things like those rootkits and the other spyware where they're trying to get into your machine and fool you, thinking that, oh, you know, your machine is infected and you need to do this or this. Bull.
Yep.
They're just trying to scare people into turning over credit card information.
Yeah, well, that's and what they want.
A lot of them will use names that are very similar to real antivirus programs. So, you know, there was a big one for a while called Antivirus 360, which is a ripoff of Norton 360, which is legitimate. And so that makes it even harder for casual users to know what's good and what's bad. So that's why we're here. Call us.
Yeah, don't click on any of those things. If you get something in an email, don't click on it. Honestly, and people yell at me all the time for this. I say never click on a link in email.
Mm-mm.
Well, I got an email from my kids about pictures of my grandkids. Should I open it? Well, use your common sense.
Mm-hmm. It may not be from them. That's the problem. It's so easy to fake a sender.
Right. But that's my point. Use your common sense. Is the language you would expect from your kids? Is it the right address? Is it everything else? My point is, don't lose the reflex to click.
Right.
Look and believe first.
Look before you click.
Yeah. Dad,
that's not as alliterative, though.
I know.
I still say, if consider you have before to think you, no. about consider it for 2 seconds, delete it. You know, if it's recommending you go to a certain site, don't click on that one in the site. Like you say, delete it and go looking for yourself. You can do Google. Google will find anything and everything.
Right.
Do your own searching. Don't rely on those stupid links in these emails. You know, it's telling you to go to check out this product, that product. Fine. They could be saying that you're going to this product, but you're going to some other website that, like Nick was saying, can clone things and watermark them so that you would swear in a court up and down that, yes, that was a legit site in those, you know, was the banking site and the marks were there and everything else that I'm used to. Yeah, because they've gotten good at copying them.
Right.
Doesn't take that hard of a task.
A friend of mine got one the other day and he said, I'm looking at this and it says it's from Microsoft. I said, well, hover over the link, because Microsoft doesn't send out emails. That's first.
Yeah.
So hover over the link and tell me what it says at the
bottom.
You're lucky
you can get them to do the updates.
Exactly. Because when you hover over the link, it'll show you often along the bottom of the screen where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So he does and he says, oh, it's from Microsoft, definitely. I said, read it to me. And it was Microsoft.something.ru. I said, no, it's a site in Russia that has a server named Microsoft. It's not from Microsoft. Just delete it. It's, you know, because it was great. It was like, get a free Windows 10. Well, everybody gets a free Windows 10.
Yep.
You get a free Windows 10. You get a free Windows 10. You get a free Windows 10. Everybody's going to get one. So, you know, it's not that exciting to get an email about it. And by the way, Microsoft doesn't know you. And honestly, let's be as honest as we can be. Microsoft doesn't care about you. They aren't going to send you an email about the new version of Windows. They're just not going to do it unless you are on one of their reporters lists.
Distribution lists.
I get stuff from them because I'm listed as a reporter.
There was an actual an issue a few months ago that Microsoft announced in an email, annoyingly, that they were going to shut down all their email security distribution lists because of a Canadian anti-spam law that would make sending spam, you know, horribly illegal and severe penalties. And so someone at Microsoft overreacted and said, well, we'll just stop sending them, without reading the fine print that said unless someone subscribed to it.
Right.
Which is okay. Which is how the bad guys get around some of the laws, too, by sneaking the I agree buttons inside of other windows. And so, Oh, no, they agreed to get our email, so we didn't break the law.
Right. Right. One of the issues with reworking Ask Nick, which I was working on all week this week, is how do I do opt-in?
Yep.
You know, how do I do opt-in? Who do I send through? Do I get something like MailChimp or, you know, MPF or any one of the hundreds of others? Do I try to do it myself and worry that I'm going to get stopped because I'm trying to send out too many emails?
Mm-hmm.
Those are situations that have to be dealt with before you can move on. But the best way, of course... Is there music in the background I hear? No, I guess not.
You may be hearing it.
I may be hearing it. Remember, I'm from a generation where we didn't have iPods and stuff. True. I have a lot of music in my head. If I want to listen to a concert from the 70s, I have it in my head. I remember it. I remember the music, and I can play it in my head. I can do that.
They say, though, if you can remember it, you weren't there.
It's exactly right. The 70s, exactly right. But I, you know, throughout my life, any music I really liked, I remember it. We've kids today have lost that ability because it's just at their fingertips. But I, you know, I either had to buy the record, which I wasn't going to do because I was both cheap and poor. So I remember the music. I don't always remember the lyrics, but I remember the music. That's that. Hey, I want to read this news item. We started talking about it before, but it's pretty cool, and I want to read about it. I'm going to do this. 3 years after the launch of the first Raspberry Pi, second-generation hardware went on sale Monday for the same $35 price while offering a lot more power. The new Raspberry Pi 2 has roughly the same form factor as the $35 Model B from July 2014, which is a really tiny little motherboard. But the Model B Plus has the same processor as the original release in 2012. The Raspberry Pi 2 earns its 2 with upgrades to the CPU and memory. The GPU, unfortunately, the graphics processing unit, is unchanged. The new Pi has a quad-core processor that runs at 900 megahertz. That compares to the single-core CPU that ran at 700 megahertz in the first generation. It's also an ARM7 processor rather than the ARM6, which limited the software available on the original hardware. Raspbian, which is a version of Debian compiled for the original Pi successor, will make another appearance on Raspberry Pi 2, but the ARM7 processor should also allow volunteers to bring Ubuntu and other OSs to the hardware. The new Pi will have a gig of RAM, which is not enough, I think, but certainly double what the previous version had. There are links to distributors selling the new Pi at the Raspberry Pi website, which Steve will put up in a few more moments. It's raspberrypi.org. New Raspbian operating system images were also released. They'll be compatible with either the Raspberry Pi or the Raspberry Pi 2. Getting a Pi when they first came out was difficult due to the fact that demand far outstripped supply. The supply chain has gotten better with the ability to build many tens of thousands a week, mostly at a Sony factory in Wales. The greater CPU power and memory in Raspberry Pi 2 will surely fuel more creative projects. The original Pi hardware was used to build robots, arcade machines, media centers, a high-performance computing cluster, musical instruments, many other things. The Pi is also used to teach children how to program. And in fact, a friend of the show, Scott, built a Raspberry Pi with his grandson that serves his Minecraft stuff. Eben Upton, the creator of the Raspberry Pi, thinks the newest Pi will be fast enough to use as a basic desktop computer. The second generation should offer smoother web browsing and the ability to run multiple programs at once without a noticeable slowdown, he said. We're hoping people could use it as their main PC. We have people here at the office who use them as their second PC. As it turns out, and this should blow your mind, both Ubuntu and Windows 10 will run on the new Raspberry Pi. I want to get one and try it as a server. A Windows server, a Linux server with a gig of RAM and a quad-core processor is way overkill. Way overkill. Anyway, are you hot for the new Raspberry Pi? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
They have a cute little cartoon on their website of a Raspberry Pi feeding raspberry juice, apparently, into a kid's brain. Because a lot of schools are using it because it's very cheap. You can give every student one in the class and all the cool stuff you can build with it.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing little product. It's tiny. It has USB ports. It has HDMI ports. It's just very, very cool. And the new quad-core 900 megahertz system, again, only a gig of RAM, but 900 megahertz system. What can't you do with it? In fact, one of the things you can do is add another external hard drive and really kick some butt. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this nonsense. I don't really know what's wrong with you, but clearly you can't be cured immediately. So stick around. We've got a whole nother hour of this to go on the other side of these important messages. But we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great. And please listen carefully. Solely member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I don't know about you, but we spent that whole break geeking out over the Raspberry Pi. I'm so excited about this thing. I'm just going to have to stop doing other things so that I can go play.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I'm very excited about this. It has a lot of stuff. It has. It's just very cool. It's just very cool.
Well, and it really makes it annoying that a regular computer, right, this is more closely related to a phone computer.
Right.
An unlocked cell phone is $600-$700 when the core computer part of it is 35.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And my favorite thing that's been built with this so far is a supercomputing cluster. They bought about 20 of these for a total of $700, and are answering questions that you would normally need a supercomputer to do. And I forget where that was, MIT, one of those places. And now they're saying, well, we're going to add on to it. They're using 3D printers to build custom racks to put them in. It's just very cool. It's just a very cool thing. So the Raspberry Pi is pretty neat. And one of the big things that people are using it for is a media center, because you can attach an external drive to it and then save a bunch of stuff and play music and play videos and play everything from it and make it your media center. It's very cool. There's a Fedora remix for it. There's a Debian remix. There's a Ubuntu Core for it.
It's bringing up all the nostalgia of us old timers that used to tinker with computers and build components and do things in the old days.
There's even a RISC operating system for it, if you really want to get down and dirty. It's very cool. All right, here's another sad chapter in the life of computer retailers. Radio Shack has officially filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, signaling the darkest chapter yet from one of America's most storied specialty electronics chains. As part of the filing, Radio Shack says it will sell off up to 2,400 of its U.S. stores. Most other underperforming locations will be closed for good, but Radio Shack's brand will live on through a store-in-a-store agreement with Sprint and Standard General, who will be purchasing many of the retailer's current shops. Here's what Sprint says customers can expect from the new hybrid Radio Shack Sprint stores. Under the terms of the new agreement, Sprint would effectively operate a store within a Radio Shack store occupying approximately one-third of the retail space of each location. Sprint employees will sell mobile devices and plans on all Sprint brands, including Boost and Virgin Mobile. The stores will be co-branded with Sprint being the primary brand on storefronts and in marketing material, so it'll really be Sprint Radio Shack, not Radio Shack Sprint. Right now, Sprint says that it has over 1,100 company-owned retail stores. Assuming this deal is approved by the bankruptcy court, Sprint will enter 1,750 of Radio Shack's locations, more than doubling the retail footprint of America's third largest carrier. Sprint says the approval process should be complete in a few months. Radio Shack's Chapter 11 filing reports assets of $1.2 billion show the company had liabilities of $1.4 billion. So that's a problem as of November 1st of last year. Plans to revitalize the brand image with concept stores, a new logo, and nostalgia-inducing Super Bowl ads failed to pay off or were blocked by the investors, and the retail shares lower than a dollar for the early part of 2015 dipped to 24 cents when the company was suspended from the New York Stock Exchange earlier this week. Radio Shack has a workforce of approximately 27,500 people, according to SEC filings. The retailer has failed to post a profit since 2011. So, where will you buy your batteries now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You know, Tandy really, with their Radio Shack, Tandy in general, has been around since, 18-something or other?
Yeah,
they were Tandy Leather, and then when electronics got big, they opened the Radio Shacks, and they did a bunch of stuff with that. And the problem was they tried to get into phones. They were going to get into phones big time, and they did it badly, and they couldn't recover. They waited for far too long, and they couldn't recover. So now, you know, people buy batteries there. They buy RC toys there. They buy, CB radio stuff. But beyond that, there aren't a lot of people to go. We used to go into the Radio Shack store and look at all the Heathkit stuff and all of those things.
All the tinkering things.
And you had a fight to find aisle space. You know, you had a fight to find a space to stand. Now you can walk in there and swing a cat around.
Yeah, really.
Nobody. Not that I would ever swing a cat around. Don't email me.
No, but back in the day, I mean, that's where I used to go for all my CB and ham radio parts.
Yep.
You know, for the antennas, or whether I was doing up a 10 meter or whatever. It was the only place around that you could go and get all the supplies, the coax, and they sold the antennas right there in the store that you could, you know, take it home and set it up, and boom, you're up and running.
But specialty places like Goldcrest have taken over that market. And you don't see as many people going to Radio Shack for stuff like that. And really, it's, you know,
yeah.
I guess if you want a little pocket TV or something, maybe that's where you'll go. But even places like Best Buy have taken over that.
Yeah. I mean, the parts and everything else.
We've got some Radio Shack gift cards left over from Christmas I'm going to have to go spend.
Do it now.
Yeah.
Do it now. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I called last week about the computer that took an hour and a half to boot.
Yeah.
Well, I ended up calling my IT guy, and he had me unplug all my USB things and everything like that and reboot.
Yeah?
And it just zipped along normally.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting.
An AV scan on a USB hard drive, maybe?
He said it probably lost a location for a USB, and it was sitting there looking for it and looking for it and looking for it, and would finally find it and move on. Since then, I plugged them in one at a time to try to figure out which one it was.
Yeah?
No difference. Nothing has changed. It's like it was magic. All I wanted to do was reboot once. I don't know what's going on. But,
how weird is that?
Yeah.
I was very happy.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd pass it on. If people are having trouble booting, maybe just try unplugging a bunch of things.
Yep. Yeah, we should have thought of that. That's a common troubleshooting procedure. Isolation. Unplug everything, yeah. See what happens.
Well, you usually have everybody shut everything down if the internet's not working right, and slowly bring up the router and then, you know, bring up each device.
Yep.
So that worked.
Cool.
A little bit on your Radio Shack thing. They, right here in Greece, I'm out by Richmond Plaza.
Yeah.
And there's a Radio Shack store half a mile from another Radio Shack store.
Yeah, that's an issue. I mean, well, back in the day,
you needed that, yeah.
You know, how far did you really want to go to buy batteries? I joke about that. You know, you could buy batteries there, but, you know.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like I said, those places used to be so crowded with ham radio people and hobbyists that you really, if you walked up to a store and saw it was that full, you would drive that other half a mile to the next Radio Shack store, hoping that that one was emptier.
Yeah, I guess. I never saw them quite that full, but, I mean, it's where I got my antennas. I don't, how do you ship a roof antenna now? I mean, you know.
You're right. Now, you can still buy that stuff there. You can still buy phones there. You can still buy, you know, all kinds of stuff there. But part of it is people don't think about Radio Shack. When was the last time you really thought, oh, I bet I could get that at Radio Shack?
Yeah.
You know, they lost mind share.
Yeah, that's geeky guys do. But the one near me, close. And I'm going to go one farther away.
I'd go there, you know, for cables and that type of stuff.
Cables all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like this extension that I have on for my headset.
Yep.
Went over there and got a 10-foot extension so I could move around a little more within the studio with my headset on and not do one of those things from my fat Greek wedding.
Yeah.
Boom. Go take it off and wind up on the floor.
And adapters? I mean, you can find a few adapters just in regular stores, but they had all the adapters.
Yeah. Well, you could also go in and still buy diodes and resistors and that type of stuff back in the day.
Fuses. I had a fuse blow on my go on my microwave. It's a simple replacement, but I went to Radio Shack to get the fuse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Yep. See, I don't even think of Radio Shack for those things anymore. I go to Goldcrest.
Yeah.
It really is weird Radio Shack just disappeared from people's minds.
Yeah. And a lot of cities had that other store, the local independent guy.
Right.
Goldcrest was always that. I remember their giant warehouse on St. Paul.
Yeah.
Now they got a pretty decent one on Goodman, but that giant one on St. Paul, you get lost in there for days.
Oh, man.
Stuff. I want one of those. I want one of those. I want one of those.
Right. Yeah, the different toys in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very weird, but you're right, Steve. It's become a very different world out there.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
All right, unplug everything.
Unplug everything, I'll remember.
Thanks a lot.
Except the power supply. Thanks, bye-bye. Oh, and the keyboard and mouse. Oh, and the monitor.
No, unplug the keyboard and mouse. Leave the monitor in so you can see if it works or not.
Right.
We've seen a few times where the pins have gotten bent, and you plug the keyboard in, and it short circuits. And now the computer won't work. If you're lucky, it's the keyboard end, and if you're not lucky, it's the motherboard end.
Right. Right. But at any rate, it's all about troubleshooting. I had a long discussion this week about troubleshooting, how you teach troubleshooting.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I'll be as honest as possible. You got to have a feel for it.
Yeah. You do. I mean, that's what it was for my business, you know, that I've been into for over 20 years. And you've got to be a special type of person that when you are presented an issue, you don't think of it as, oh, boy, you know, this is going to really suck, you know, it's going to take me. You got to look at it, oh, cool.
Yep.
Something new to play with and see what I can do to fix it.
Yep.
And
my, you got to feel that excitement at the challenge.
My late partner, Dan, and I, you know, we used to have such a good time.
I think we should clarify, Dan's former not dead.
Partner. No, he's just...
Former partner, late partner. You.
I don't know why I said late. But yes, former partner Dan. Where'd that come from?
Yeah. So many of my friends got married and can't play anymore.
Yeah. No, lately I've been...
And then I got married and couldn't play anymore.
Exactly. No, I've been just... It's like, well, last week, you know, I've been going to too many darn funerals and... You know,
yeah, I told you we're in that, you know, yeah, they talk about the three stages of man. The three stages are birthdays, weddings, funerals.
Yeah.
First, you see your family during birthdays. Then you see them only during weddings. Then you see them only during funerals.
And now, what was my aunt that just passed away? And that's now leaves 5 out of 19 still here, and it's like we're standing around.
This is before there were televisions, generally, folks.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, my grandparents had two sets of twins. But, you know, it was funny because we're standing around, and only two of my relatives, aunt and uncle, were able to make it. And it's like, now it's all cousins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're standing around. All right, who's the oldest? And that's my one cousin, Linda, and then there's Lorraine, and then me. I'm thinking, wait a minute. I'm the third oldest?
Yep.
Dang!
Used to be the baby.
Yeah!
Yep.
And it's like, where did it go? But yeah, you know, just the times, like you say, changing so much. And the technology and everything else. Thinking of old stores. Do you remember, Steve wouldn't, Noah's Ark?
Noah's Ark?
Used to be, there was one in Northgate Plaza. They used to sell. It was like a, Western Auto. Remember them?
Yeah, oh, yeah, well, I remember Western Auto, but I don't remember Noah's Ark.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe, but I thought there was a store called Noah's Ark.
We had a customer in Noah's Ark. They were children's learning toys.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I just didn't know.
Yeah, that, and then Key Drugs, and Loblaws, and Star Market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those hearts.
Green stamps.
Yep. Jam Fields. Stamps.
Yeah, Jam Fields.
As a kid, I used to help my mother organize her green stamps.
Yeah.
Every weekend, you know, and it was something we did together as a family. It's very cool. All right, listen, enough of this nostalgic nonsense. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are... Soundbites.
I was going to say we were talking about how to teach troubleshooting, and one of the things I've always thought is I started out learning how to program. Mm-hmm. Knowing how computers are supposed to work kind of leads into troubleshooting why they're not working.
Right.
But programming is another one of those arts. You just sort of have to get it to be. You can learn the language, but if you don't, you know, have the art of programming, you may not do very good.
Right. For me, it was at Kodak, and it's when we first got the first dual 5 1/4 floppy drive PCs in, and there were, you know, some of them would have issues in that, and my friend Stan, who I used to work with, we got a couple in our lab, and he's saying, oh, these darn things are, you know, new technology, it's never going to catch on, blah, blah, blah. Well, I took it apart, and I played around with it, and I got them working. Hence, that's where that wizard that I now have on my Facebook came from, because he goes, you know what, you're a wizard at this stuff. You just seem to take to it. You see it as a challenge, not as, panic.
Yep.
It's like, oh, cool, let's see what we can do.
Yeah.
And it's that whole mindset.
Yep.
You got to have. It's a unique.
It's you know, when you get excited by a problem, that's when you're the guy who should be doing some troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing stuff. But, you know, not everybody is into it. I get that. And we also get that not everybody is a programmer. Not everybody is a hardware person. I personally can't for the life of me solder anything ever.
Oh, my brother's good at that.
You got to have a real steady hand.
He used to be able to take, remember the old-fashioned clips when you put the memory sticks in?
Sure.
They would, the ends would snap off because you used to have to click them in. Well, I had one come off on a client's motherboard, and they needed it. So I called my brother over. We took the motherboard out. He undid all 64 of those little tiny.
Wow.
Unsoldered them all. Put the new one in, soldered it right back up.
Yeah, because the usual fix is replace the whole logic board.
Right.
And it's like unbelievable. But that's what he does. You know, he works in electronics.
Right.
And he's good at it.
Some people just have the knack.
And he's got, you know, sitting there doing each one little tiny hole. This is about the size of a needle, folks. That's poking through a motherboard that you have to unsolder. And you can't overheat them or you'll mess up the whole board.
That's right. That's right.
Yep.
If you want a board with a blob, a gigantic blob of metal on it, call me. That's my thing. I can do that without a problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Lynn from Clymer, New York. How are you this week, Lynn?
Oh, not too bad. And not three bad either.
There you go.
Couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
One is, unless I missed it, I didn't hear you say anything about the TurboTax story.
Which
might be interesting to some of the people.
Yeah, you go ahead. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I heard was last night on the Ohio radio station at midnight that in Kentucky that some of the people going to file their taxes using TurboTax were getting a notice that they couldn't file because their taxes had already been filed.
Yeah, it's a fraud case, and TurboTax has suspended state filings. I think everywhere, although I don't know that, but I think it's everywhere.
I know, in that story, they said 17 states plus Kentucky.
Right, apparently Kentucky's not a state. So, yes. So, 18 out of the 50 states. And really what's happened is it's fraudulent filing. They have enough of your information to file taxes in your name. They file a fraudulent return that looks like they get thousands and thousands of dollars back. TurboTax doesn't know who you are, right? So they just go on the website and say, let's do this. Let's go for it. And TurboTax says, sure, not a problem. They put it in. You get a refund. It gets sent to some P.O. box. You disappear into the ether.
And then
when
the government figures out it was a fraud and wants their money back, they come after you because it was your Social Security number.
Right. So, yeah, it's an ongoing thing.
Did it just get found out about yesterday or something?
Well, I know that earlier this week they just simply stopped taking state taxes. This was originally, you know, it would happen once or twice a year, no big deal. What we think of as huge numbers, like thousands of times, means nothing to the government. They're doing millions upon billions of tax returns, so a few thousand is nothing. But apparently now it's becoming a big deal. It's actually turned into a business for these bad guys.
Mm.
Okay. You know, if I can get a couple of thousand, and it's not a lot of money, any individual one, a couple of thousand dollars, not a lot of money, but you do that to 100,000 people, now you're talking big cash.
Yep.
And apparently,
some people, a thousand or two is a lot of money, too.
Yep.
Well, right.
Yeah. And according to USA Today, bastion of news they are, TurboTax has resumed filings. But apparently, some states are still not allowing it.
Right.
I think Minnesota, the article is mentioning that Minnesota is one of the states that won't allow it. But so for many, it doesn't think about New York's at least. So at least we've been safe so far.
Our taxes are so baroque.
Yeah.
That
and baroque
and broke. Yeah, exactly. but yeah, and so now, and of course, it's a huge problem for the people who get caught with this, because once that information is into the system, you know, it's got to be somebody's got to prove you're you, prove that wasn't your return, prove you didn't get it, take you out of the system by hand. What a mess. What a complete and utter mess.
Yep. That's one thing I like about my life. I've lived in one place for almost 50 years, and that kind of helps.
Yep. I remember.
Anyway, second question, if I may.
Yeah.
My neighbor got a, I think it's a Lumia phone.
Sure.
Next is Lumia or whatever. Can't remember. But anyway, so we went to, he had a whole bunch of pictures he took. There was a building fell down near us here, and he'd been there and taken a bunch of pictures of it. Then he tried to show them to me, and with my eyes on his phone, that's a beautiful phone. He just got it
right
2 weeks Monday. That thing is quick.
Oh, yeah, is this the new Windows phone?
No, it's not the newest version because it's the 630, I think.
Oh, the 6, yeah, but it's still a Windows phone.
Yeah. And he's had so much crap that didn't work worth a hoot. And I looked at it and tried to do things with it, and I'm glad I don't bother with phones.
You're right.
He got this one, and it just, boom, it's there.
Yep.
If I was going to get one, I think that's where I'd go. But anyway, he had all these pictures on there, and I thought, well, my big Dell computer's got Bluetooth on it, and I know his phone's got Bluetooth on it. We just mate them up, and he can just slide them right over there. Well, we got it mated up, sort of, and then the icons on my computer come up with those little triangular yellow traffic signs with exclamation points in them. Well, I know what those mean.
So yeah.
I go to update drivers, and it says, you got the latest drivers. So I said, well, okay, I'll delete the drivers. I'll put the original disk that they provided me with that computer that's just driver's disk. And I put that in, and I deleted the drivers, rebooted the machine. I thought, that'll fix it. It came up, and you got the latest drivers, but there's no driver in here.
Yeah. Bluetooth is interesting in that the Bluetooth specification encompasses many different features. And most of the time, Bluetooth on a cell phone is just audio for connecting to a headset. Bluetooth file transfer is a different feature set, and not every phone supports it, and then not every computer supports it either. So in most cases, you use the USB cable, and then the camera, the computer thinks it's a camera. Or you pull the SIM card out or the SD card out to connect that to your computer, and it thinks it's just a camera. So it may be that model phone doesn't have Bluetooth file transfer capability, just Bluetooth audio capability.
Oh, that could be. I'll have to do some investigating on that.
And I've been looking on the Lumia 630 website, and it doesn't say what Bluetooth capabilities it has. It just offers to sell you a headset.
Oh.
So you can pretty much guarantee that all the phones have Bluetooth headset capabilities.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it would be an easy way. As it turned out, he emailed them to me, so I got them. But I just wanted to find out what was going on, and because in the future I might want that feature if I decide to go that way on a phone.
Right, all right.
If I decide to get a phone. I'm home so much of the time, it's hardly worth it for me to have one. But
yeah,
it looks like Microsoft has a Files app for Windows 8 that you run. And it can do a transfer, but I'm trying to see.
He would install that on his phone?
You install it on your computer.
Oh, okay. On Windows 7 computer?
It's saying Windows 8.1.
Yeah. That's a product that I'll never have in this house.
The picture doesn't show a cable, but the description doesn't say if it needs a cable or if it will do it wirelessly.
Yeah. There's a great app on Android phones called AirDroid.
Yeah, there's a bunch of similar ones for iOS, too. There's got to be one for Microsoft
OS. And there's got to be. I just don't know what it is. What AirDroid does is you turn on wireless, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start this app, and it essentially starts a little web browser in your phone. And it tells you what its address is, and you go to that in your web browser on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and now you can open up folders, copy files, do whatever you want to do.
You go from the computer, you're looking into the phone.
Exactly. So if you want to copy out a bunch of pictures, you can do that. You can send SMS messages. You can make calls. I mean, you can do all kinds of things with AirDroid. There's got to be a similar product for Windows phones. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, I thought maybe you guys, one of you would know. I thought I'd give a phone call and find out.
If anybody out there knows, give us a call about that. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you, Lynn. Have fun.
I found one called Share It from Lenovo that works with Windows Phone, Android, and iOS. We'll see if that has any interesting reviews on it. So the other half of that is it's great if it works between Windows and Android, but if it working cross-platform is even better.
Well, exactly. That's the harder part. Works on all Windows, Androids, and Apple devices. It's free. Download now, blah, blah, blah.
It only supports 100 gigabyte files.
Is that all? Pikers. Pikers. Maybe this is it. It certainly looks like the right thing, but without actually looking at the video, which I'm certainly not going to do now. But it looks like you can share stuff.
And it's from Lenovo. Why would they bother? They don't even make a phone, do they?
They make laptops.
They make laptops running Windows, yeah.
Yep.
But they also make it for Android and for iOS.
Interesting. All right, our next caller is Jim from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to hook up my computer to the TV, and I needed to know what I had to have to do that. I found a place where I can save about $200 on a cable bill by watching movies on
the
computer. And I could put a big screen up here, but I don't know what I need. I need a video card. I got a Dell.
Well, it depends on what connector the TV has and what connector the computer has. A lot of computers have a VGA connection, which is 15 pins in three rows. And a lot of televisions will have that same VGA connection on it as well. If your computer and TV have an HDMI connection on it, that gives you better quality audio. So in most cases, all you need is a cable to run between the computer and the television.
If we got the right cable, it'll run it.
Yep. The computer thing.
I might have to buy an adapter card.
No. Right. Well, you might have to. Now, is this a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop. It's an older Dell.
Yeah, generally.
I'm running Unix on it.
Yep. Generally speaking, the computer sees it just as a monitor. It doesn't know it's a TV. It just sees it as a monitor.
Right.
Now, your TV has to have that VGA connection on the back of it as well.
So here's,
the cable's matched, why I'm home free then.
Right. Yep. And, of course, because it's a desktop, you can always buy a card that matches the highest grade cable, the highest grade connector that your television will take. I mean, that's the way to look at it. Look, here's the thing. HDMI is the best connection. So if your television or your monitor has HDMI, then that really truly is the way to go.
And if the computer's a little older, it may not have that.
It may not have that. You may need to buy a new video card.
Okay, does not enough memory affect it? Do I need to upgrade the RAM?
Well, it depends. What are you planning to run? Are you running Myth TV or something along that line?
Yeah, just a TV. I just wanted to try to run that Rabbit program, movies.
Oh, yeah. You probably should have a couple of gig of RAM at least.
But in general,
I'll have to buy that, I guess.
Yeah, in general, you don't need anything extra. The computer just sees it as a monitor. You plug it in, and it says, oh, hey, a monitor.
Yep.
But it plays the movies just on the regular
screen.
Yep.
Right.
On my computer, it's already doing it. I just wanted to get higher quality.
Right.
A bigger
exactly.
picture. Yeah.
Exactly. You may need a new video card. If you're going to get higher resolution, the video card will only do a certain amount. Listen, I'm getting the stink eye here. We got to take a break back in just a couple of
okay,
minutes.
Okay, thanks for helping me.
Thank you. With Soundbites, I'm member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, the big news of the day is that The Big Lebowski is available on Google Play. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Oh, hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was on the internet yesterday on my laptop, and all of a sudden I get a screen that says no internet connection. So it did, shut it off, rebooted it, checked the settings, if you will, and it just says no connections are available, and the little button on the screen or on the keyboard is yellow, like it's turned off.
Yep.
It's not receiving any Wi-Fi.
What?
It's about a year old HP with Windows 8.1. I was wondering if there was any other troubleshooting tips you might have other than the fact it might have just died.
No, there's a couple of things you can try. First, don't get entirely crazy. If you've got any other device that does wireless, check to see if your wireless router is still working.
It is, and I reset that.
Okay. What I have found is many laptops, including some HP models, and I can't rattle them off the top of my head, actually have a physical switch on the computer, on the laptop, that turns the internet, the wireless access on and off.
To help save battery, you can turn it off.
You can turn it off. What I have found is that it is always placed exactly where you want to pick up the laptop, so people are turning it off all the stinking time. So the first thing you should do is look to see if indeed there is a way either and many machines also have a keyboard combination that will do the same thing, a function F key thing that will do exactly the same thing, turn off your wireless. So check through the, assuming you have a manual for this particular model, take a physical look at the sides and the front to see if indeed there is a physical switch. And secondly, check the keyboard to see if one of those extra little symbols looks like a wireless symbol, and hitting a function key turns it on and off.
Okay, and failing both of those is probably something probably cooked.
Likely, but I would, it is much, much, much more likely that it's one of those two things.
Okay, and I will do that. Thank you so very much.
Good luck.
And if it does happen to be the internal Wi-Fi died, you can get a USB wireless adapter relatively cheaply to add another, basically another Wi-Fi connector. And then you disable the internal one and let the external one work.
Yep.
So we tell that with a lot of customers run into that, where the internal wireless died, and it's hundreds of dollars to tear the computer apart and replace that internal card, or $20 buy this.
Yeah, exactly. It sticks out a little, but you know what?
Yeah.
So what?
Well, and then they put it in their bag and snap the connector off.
Right, right. You do have to be a little more careful with it, but beyond that, it works fine. But I'll tell you, that stupid little physical switch.
Yep.
We bought a whole bunch of computers back at Saunders in the day, and they had it at exactly the balance point. So if you were carrying it under one arm, your fingers naturally fell right on that switch.
Ooh.
And many is the time I would get this frantic call, I'm trying to teach a class and I can't connect to the internet. Is the network down? No, the network is not down. You flipped that switch. Oh, yeah, the switch. Nobody remembers the switch because who puts a stupid switch?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, it's just
poor design.
Even if there isn't a physical switch, there is often a keyboard combination,
right?
Like function F something.
Yep, and there's usually a little along the function keys. You'll see it looks like a little tower,
right? Often usually, blue or
orange or whatever.
And he said the light was yellow, so that probably means it was turned off,
mm-hmm. right?
Because it's usually blue.
And a lot of folks don't realize that they'll hit the function keys thinking, oh, they got to try these other combinations,
right?
And they accidentally turn it off.
Well, and people fumble finger things all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just is human nature.
Yeah.
You know, and so the first thing I tell people to do is check to see if there's a physical switch, then check to see if there's a software switch, and that's how you can
Like you say, more of them have gone to the function key and something else.
Because there's no physical cost making those in the computer.
To have the switch externally costs them more.
Yep.
So they, like anything else, they, you know, streamline
and that
as
physical
much as
switch
can.
Was the bane of our existence for the longest
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah.
Really, you know, you've bought yourself a fairly expensive tool. You should spend some time familiarizing yourself with it. Long before I buy a laptop, I check out all the ports, all the external features, everything else. Then when I do buy one, mm-hmm. I spend a little time before I turn it on just looking at where are the ports, mm-hmm. what weird stuff is on here. That's how I first found that switch. I thought, what the hell is this switch? And of course, it's just little black rings.
Yeah, there's not much to it.
On the black.
Yeah, black button on a black background in black lettering that lights up black to let you know you pushed it.
Exactly. So I actually went to, you know, there's a little manual. Just, you know, one of those pull-out sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And I found an arrow from that spot, and I looked at it and it said, wireless on-off switch. And I thought, what kind of moron puts a... Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Right,
because
you're going to save a hundredth of a milliwatt every hour by turning that off.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get about an extra 11 minutes off a good battery. But whatever. But the point is, spend some time familiarizing yourself with that hardware before you start playing with it. And... in Tim's case, definitely look for that physical switch, and if that doesn't work, check the function keys to see if there is something that would turn off. And then usually, you know, and now I have to use the same word for two different things. The function keys are the F1, F2, F3, etc. But there's also a function key down by the control and alt that if you hold that down and hit a function key does something else now. So you got to be aware of what's going on.
Well, it's simple electronics because what they're trying to do is compact more into it, and by just adding one key, they double the number of, you know, those 12 keys up there instead of just having 12. Now, there's 24.
Yep.
So they get a lot more use out of it and doing different things. Some of them will also, by holding down the function key, also turn up the volume and turn down the volume on your speaker.
Right.
Yeah. So and that's the difference. There are F keys, and then there are function keys.
Right.
Some do functions, some do Fs.
Right.
And for all of us, it's F.
But yeah, so, and I do understand there is actually a legitimate use for that. If you're somewhere where you do not trust the wireless and you can turn it off and work offline, you're safer. And
yeah,
I do get that. I absolutely do get that. But they really need, particularly that one model we had, they really needed to put that switch somewhere else. They really needed to do that.
It was dangerous.
It was a terrible design decision. Absolutely terrible. And I realized it had more to do with where is the most convenient place we can put this switch?
Well, yeah.
As opposed to where's the best place to put this switch?
Yeah, and designing of the motherboard, you know what I mean?
Where's the cheapest place we can put this switch? But it was an issue, and it probably still is an issue for all I know, but it's no longer my issue, so that's okay.
No, most of them, like you say, have gone to the function keys, and that, and there's one less switch that they have to have, you know, slimness.
Yep.
And trying to get everything slimmer
and it
small.
Makes it, you know, a tenth of a penny cheaper.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound like a lot until you multiply that by 30 or 40 or 50 million of these devices that they make. Suddenly now we're talking real money. So, you know, that just, whatever it is, cuts into their profit, and that's a bad thing. You know, you cut a tenth of a penny out of a machine, and suddenly you're looking at, I don't know, $500,000 in savings. That's not a bad number to be looking at. So that's the sort of thing that goes on there. But yeah, we're hoping that very soon now we'll be seeing things like Windows 10 come out, which hopefully will take advantage of all of that stuff. I mean, the hardware one, of course, that's just a hardware switch. No matter what else happens, that'll work. Yep. Most of the versions of Windows that come out, maybe not the previews, right? Not this, because you can download the preview right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not going to be optimized for every laptop out there.
Right.
But once it comes available, you'll be able to get a version specifically for your machine that takes advantage of your specific function keys.
Hmm.
Most of them are standardized these days, but not always. And that's one of the issues with new hardware and with new software on old hardware, is that compatibility, backwards compatibility that they don't have anymore.
And that's one thing where Apple has, Apple's never been afraid, and it's upset customers, that they kill backward compatibility and say this OS will not run on your 10-year-old computer.
Right.
Sorry, buy a new computer. Where Microsoft, you know, let's run Windows 10 on our Pentium, you know, 1.
You're right.
It would probably run.
All right, that music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please use Chicago calling next time. Call early and often. We're done for another week, but do not go away. Michael Oden is here to keep herd on George, who will be playing the best German music you will hear all week long. And so stay tuned to that dial. And then come back next week, 166 hours from now, and listen to a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We are Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.